Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Lobby.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, horror hounds, and welcome to Now Slaying, an It's Lays podcast production where we break down the latest and greatest in the world of horror. I'm your not-so-humble host, Colton.
I'm Rowan.
And today in the show, we're going to be reviewing Abigail, which was released April 19th, 2024, exclusively in theaters. Now, Rowan, we're no strangers to Radio Silence's productions, having covered the Scream reboot on the main show, Scream 6 here on Now Slaying, but Scream has essentially been canceled at this point, so I don't really want to talk about Scream. I just want to know, were you looking forward to Abigail?
Yeah, I was kind of excited. So I'm probably one of the, like, the only people on Earth that still I have not watched Ready or Not. I own it.
I searched that up, yeah, beforehand, before getting into this. And I was like, has Rowan seen that? I don't think we've ever discussed it.
No, I own it. I bought it when it came out, and just one of those things that I just never got around. I think we always talked about doing it on the show, and then we just never did it.
We have. It's been one of those that's kind of made it far in the listener polls pretty much every single year on the show. So eventually it'll get its time in the limelight.
Someday. And I think I said before when we did Six and Scream 6 and the reboot or whatever, like, I really enjoyed Southbound. That was, like, one of my favorite, like, current anthology films that came out. So, you know, Radio Silence has been pretty hit for me, I'd say. I've enjoyed what they've done. So, of course, I was excited for, you know, something totally different. And, you know, is it even a resurrection if you've only really been gone for, like, 6 months of Melissa Barrera? But, yeah, I mean, I was just pumped in total to see this. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of, obviously, Radio Silence's earlier stuff. I wasn't as big on Scream and Scream 6 as some other people have been, largely because Melissa Barrera just doesn't work for me as an actress. I'm not saying, you know, what she said on social media or anything like that. It's just, as an actress, I can essentially never buy her in basically any role I've ever seen her in. And spoilers, this movie isn't going to change that. But basically going into it, I was like, okay, she's the star of the movie. I'm not big on her, but I do really like Dan Stevens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like Catherine Newton is kind of like hit or miss. Sometimes I really like her, sometimes I don't. And then, yeah, just the general premise of the movie. I was, like, cautiously optimistic about it, or, like, looking forward to it a little bit. It was the sort of movie where whenever the trailer would come on, I would kind of watch bits and pieces of it, but kind of, like, intentionally try to avoid watching everything.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I did do that, because I do feel like this is a spoiler, or this is a trailer that pretty much spoils or reveals an awful lot of the movie. So I'm glad I wasn't someone who was, like, constantly watching those 3 and 4 minute trailers leading up to the release of this, because it was also largely just within the last, like, couple of months. I mean, even when we did our 2024, like, kind of look ahead on the show where we were trying to talk about this movie, it didn't have a title. It didn't have really anything out there other than, like, some rumors, no poster, nothing like that. So any of the marketing realistically has happened within the last 2 or 3 months. So, yeah, I'm glad I was avoiding all that. Man, I was, you know, cautiously optimistic about it. Not really my bag 100%. But yeah, obviously we always go check out the new horror movies in theaters on the show. So I knew I had to go see it regardless. So was Radio Silence's latest an ABBA fail? Well, before we get into that, let's sink our teeth into the trailer.
You all know the rules. No real names, no cell phones.
Whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
$7 million per person. Something doesn't add up. This whole thing is a trap.
I'm sorry about what's gonna happen to you.
We kidnapped a vampire.
I like playing with my son.
Abigail, only in theaters April 19th, rated R.
What you just heard is from Abigail, directed by Matt Bettinelli, Open, and Tyler Gillett, and written by Stephen Shields and Guy Busick. And the story is as follows. After a group of criminals kidnap the ballerina daughter of a powerful underworld figure, they retreat to an isolated mansion unaware that they're locked inside with no normal little girl. Now here on Now Slang, we like to keep things relatively spoiler-free before getting into the more spoiler-filled discussion. And Rowan, I usually kick things off with, you know, asking, you know, what are your spoiler-free thoughts on Abigail, but specifically with this movie, I kind of want to just start off with just talking about the marketing as a whole, because there's no real way to talk about this movie without spoiling what has been shown in the marketing, which this movie has very much been marketing on a key detail that the movie kind of hides for, I would say, the first 50 minutes of the movie or so. So I just want to like issue an extra warning to the listeners, just in case they don't know what this movie is about. They've been living under a rock. They haven't seen a poster or a trailer or anything. Because I was watching this movie and I was like, okay, when are we getting to like what this movie was marketed on? And I was sitting there for like 20, 30, 40. I wound up checking my watch and it was a full hour after showtime before it like finally revealed what is revealed like a minute into the trailer. So the movie treats it as a big reveal. I don't think we can really discuss the movie without discussing what that reveal is. So, yeah, just, you know, we're not going to get into any details of what exactly happens or the carnage or what unfolds. But, you know, if you're listening to this review, hopefully you know that Abigail is a vampire, which, you know, is something that I think the show or the filmmakers probably would have liked to keep close to the chest and not really reveal. But the marketing definitely spoiled that. So, Rowan, Abigail's a vampire. What are your spoiler-free thoughts on Abigail?
Yeah, so I mean, fair warning, if you were tired of all, you know, all the other reviewers and everyone, you know, I've taken a peek at what some have said, not I stayed away from YouTube, but, you know, kind of, you know, the Variety and Roger and Ebert, all that kind of stuff, and every single person has talked about this film, and everyone seems to just be going to directly to a little 90s film with Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, From Dusk Till Dawn. And I really think, I'm just warning now, like, it's really going to be hard not to talk about that because, obviously, you know, a film, highly influenced by not just that film, but that kind of film, like kind of a schlocky, fun vampire time. Now, you know, did I think it was fun? That might be a different story. But, I mean, you know what? For positives for me, you know, and how positive is it? Because I know when we did get a chance to talk about Godzilla Kong, I confessed my love of Dan Stevens, and I thought he was like one of the best parts of this movie. I thought he was kind of, this guy just lives in genre. Like, he, when you allow him to be hammy, like, he's great in this. And overall, like, I thought it was a pretty interesting cast of people. Obviously, like, Catherine Newton's kind of made herself a modern-day scream queen where she's really, like, focusing on doing horror movies and seems to love being in that era. Obviously, Miss Melissa Barrera, who, unlike you, I've had the opportunity, I think, almost to review everything horror she's been in, because we did
there's
do
a couple, like, Tubi movies or
Bed Rest, which were kind of like her pre-Radio Silence days.
Well, I don't know if you've seen the musical starring her, so we still might be...
Yeah, no, know, not
equal.
Yet.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical that she was in. I forget the name of it now, but
yeah,
it was like,
I might pass on
in
that
the Heights,
one.
In the Heights.
In the Heights, yeah. No, yeah. I might pass on that one. But, you know, like, I thought, like, Kevin Durand was in this. I thought he was pretty good. He was pretty funny for the part. Obviously, you know, my boy Esposito in there. I can't, I never complain about a little
very
Esposito.
Much typecast, but yes.
Oh, you know, yeah, I mean,
Giancarlo Esposito, but he comes in and he's been basically doing his Gus Fring impression for the past 10 years.
Get that money, man. Get that money. And
absolutely.
Absolutely love that. Angus Cloud, I'll get more into it in the spoiler section, I think. But yeah, you know, RIP, I don't know if this was how you wanted to go out, but...
Yeah, so I've never seen him in anything else, Rowan. Is this just kind of, like, his vibe? Like,
this
it
is,
seemed like he was barely even, like, coherent in this movie,
this
pretty
is,
much to me.
This is what I thought was pretty interesting, because obviously, you know, obviously this is kind of his first and last big production that he was in, and this is just him in Euphoria.
Euphoria.
Like, this is his character in Euphoria. Like, he is, you know, a drug dealer in Euphoria, like, you know, like, G'd up white guy that's, like, all he talks is Ebonics. He's half out of it all the time.
Okay.
So, you know, I could see why this would have been, like, a transition role for him for, you know, like, he kind of is just doing the same thing. And obviously, he was, like, a big, you know, like, social media loved him. Like, women loved him from Euphoria. So, just kind of coming in and, you know, playing the, I guess, heartthrob role of the film.
Yeah, for me, he's just kind of, you know, obviously, and I'm not trying to speak ill of the dead. I'm just mostly speaking about the character himself. He was kind of like a bit of like a burnt out character, kind of like the stoner character, but almost like I thought it was ratcheted up even more where it almost just seemed like he was barely present in the movie where I was just like, man, is this like what he did in Euphoria? And I guess the answer is, yeah, I guess kind of. It was more of the same, yeah.
And everything I know about him or have read, which isn't a lot, but I mean, it seemed that this is kind of, you know, there was a lot of like issues there in real life, and this is,
yeah.
It seemed everyone you kind of talked to said that his persona on Euphoria was also very similar to like what he was as a person.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, maybe a little truer to life performance. Even though, you know, whether or not we thought that worked is questionable. My biggest kind of thing, like with this, was I'm assuming this really was kind of aimed at being a horror comedy to me, or at least like a schlocky good time.
Yeah, I mean, like they were trying to do something similar in the vein of the new Scream movies, I guess, right? Where there is like a lot of like horror comedy. It's kind of like overly gory, almost like gory to like a comedic effect to a certain degree. But I guess you were probably trending in the direction of like you didn't find it that funny or that comedic or that enjoyable.
I was just really confused by the tone. I'll say that without it being spoilery. I didn't understand it because I looked, I double checked, like this was like 18A and, you know, so this wasn't our movie, but like as gory as it was the entire time, I just kept feeling like I was like, this doesn't feel like an R-rated horror movie. Like this feels, you know, even though there's all this gore, like the tone of it and everything, like it feels like a 14 movie. And that's where I really started to pick up all my comparisons with From Dusk Till Dawn, which obviously, you know, like single location, vampires, you know, it, like very similar trappings of what was going on in that film, except like that one, you know, not only was it super gory, but it was just like super hard R, like ridiculous. And I think, you know, overall From Dusk Till Dawn was also like funny at the end of the day, where this one, like it seemed like there was a lot of performances that were meant to kind of get chuckles out of the audience. And my audience was full. Like it was very busy and like nothing landed laughs, nothing land. Like it just seemed like everything they shot for, nothing landed in this film. Like, I don't know what your showing would have been like, but
yeah, I went to like, I don't know. It was like the 1:30 Friday afternoon showing. So no, it wasn't very full. There was probably about, I don't know, a dozen of us there. But what I noticed was very like predominantly women and a lot of women by themselves. And I actually found like they were eating it up quite a bit.
Oh,
like they
really?
Were laughing at a lot of the jokes. But I do think the sort of humor and the sort of writing in this just I'm kind of adverse to. And I don't know how to describe it because it's not really like edgelord comedy. It's like it is overly sarcastic and a little bit mean spirited at times, but also like it's said with kind of like winking when they're saying it. I don't know how to like pinpoint what it is without giving an actual example, which the one that is like front of mind is a spoiler, so I can't say it. So maybe I'll get into it a little bit more in the spoiler filled discussion, but a lot of the writing in this just didn't work for me. I just thought everyone was kind of overly like snarky and just like assholes the entire time. And I understand like they're a group of criminals. They should be like, you know, shooting the shit and, you know, cutting each other down and stuff. But it just kind of felt like exhausting to me after a certain point that it was just like, yeah, I didn't find it overly funny either. I think there was one gag where a character mixes up like garlic for another vegetable that I thought was like kind of funny, mostly just because of the physical comedy of the character, not actually like the writing or anything.
Yeah.
It was more so just the character who was delivering it, the actress. But yeah, by and large, the movie I didn't find like that funny or really that entertaining either. I think like once again for me, like Melissa Barrera, she's the basically the lead of this movie, and she is cast as a recovering morphine addict who is like a scene mommy with raccoon eyes and like teased hair and stuff. And it's just like, dude, like she just didn't work for me remotely. Like, it's like you're casting a supermodel essentially to be like this like recovering addict scene girl that I was just like, why would you cast Melissa Barrera as this role? Like, I don't know. You should have put someone else in there. I just didn't believe her character for a moment. And I'll even say like kind of like her character's like maternal instincts that probably should have played up a little bit more. And, you know, maybe forged a bond with Abigail or, you know, made some of the more character developmental moments in the movie more impactful. Like they didn't really land for me either. So it was just kind of like I didn't really like the cast all that much. I like the cast as like actors. Like, you know, once again, I mentioned like Catherine Newton and Giancarlo Esposito. I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan. I like Dan Stevens. It was just more so this like cast of characters all playing just like these archetypes of like, oh, I'm the hacker. I'm the muscle. I'm the, you know, the ex police officer. I'm the Marine. I'm the whatever. It was just like, OK, like I've seen this before. And where you keep referencing From Dusk Till Dawn, I find this movie very much becomes Ready or Not, and specifically in the last half, it's almost like feels like beat for beat Ready or Not to me, where it's like, I wonder when you watch Ready or Not if you'll be like kind of exhausted by this idea of essentially people creeping around, you know, this old kind of old money mansion, you know, trying to avoid a threat, you know, and with like, you know, little bursts of gore of people getting killed off and stuff. Like, it felt very Ready or Not to me. And I mean, there's probably a huge section of the audience that love Ready or Not and probably just wanted to see that movie again. But for me, it was just like a lot of it just didn't really hit. Some other things I had like issues with was just kind of like playing fast and loose with the vampire mythology, which once again, we can't really get into all the little beats of it, but it's like, all right, in this movie, the invitation rule doesn't exist, or, you know, garlic doesn't affect them, or crucifixes don't affect them, but stakes still affect them and sunlight still affects them. And it's just like, they kind of like poke fun at it in terms of like, oh, well, what sort of vampire is this? Is it a Twilight vampire? Is it, you know, a Nosferatu vampire? What sort of vampire is it, right? And they kind of like point, you know, they make fun of it themselves, but it wound up being like a logic issue to me at a certain point when it's like, well, I don't really know how this person turned into a vampire or how they could turn other people or if there's familiars involved or like, you know, all this sort of logic of just like what I know about like vampirism and like, you know, media. That I was just like, this is a little bit strange that I shouldn't really be thinking about during this movie. I should just be along for the ride. And also, like, I just thought the third act in particular, even though it has a couple of like little fun twists and turns, I just thought it went on way too long. It felt like this movie felt like it has that first act that's like 50 minutes, a middle act that's like 20, and then a third act that's like another 50 minutes or something. It just felt like very bloated or very just like, it didn't feel right to me when I was watching it. I thought the movie was ending like two or three times before it ended. And then it even gets like extra cute with like kind of how it ends. And I won't say that because that's actually a spoiler, but there's stuff like there within the last like 5-10 minutes that I was just kind of like groaning at. So yeah, it's, I don't know. This is so strange to me, this movie. I think I'm just still baffled so much by the marketing of this movie where they very much market this movie on like, it's a ballerina vampire, you know, they're cracking jokes about her. The whole like last 2 minutes of the trailer is just Abigail tearing through people and whatnot. And when you get into this movie, there's only like 6 people. So if you watch the trailer and see an Abigail tear through 3 or 4 people, I mean, you know, there's not much to work with. You kind of know who's going to die before even going into the movie, even if you're kind of trying to turn your brain off. And for me, it kind of winds up being like a larger issue with just marketing in general of all these movies recently, where it's just, I feel like I'm going into movies all the time and I have like most of it spoiled, or it's just literally, it's not the movie that was being marketed like at all. So I don't know. This is a weird movie for me. I don't think it was terrible or anything. It was just like, I think I was just like underwhelmed the entire time and kind of was like, I just found it a little bit dull. There is a lot of gore and special effects, makeup and stuff on display. What do you think of that, Rowan? Usually, you know, usually that's the sort of stuff that kind of wins you back a little bit, but
see, and there was, but to me, I came out of it because I was like, was there though? Because like you said, I mean, you know, I like I said, I'm going to keep going back. But, you know, I think about something like From Dusk Till Dawn or the single location. And like what worked about From Dusk Till Dawn is there was like so many bodies packed into this location that it was like nothing but violence and chaos and gore and special effects, and it was like every 2 minutes something's happening, where like you said with this, it's such a small cast and such a long runtime for such a small cast that it's like it seems like we literally get through half of the cast before the halfway mark, and then it's like, well, now I know we have to slow down because, you know, we don't have any other people. And like, to me, it's like, all right, like, yeah, the, you know, we'll talk in the spoiler section, like the gore gags and stuff. But it's like I said, it was just, it was this weird feeling the entire time where it was like, I'm being presented this gore, but I'm just, it doesn't have the effect on me. I'm like, oh, this is a gory movie. Like, it still gave me the effect of, like, I'm watching just something for, like, preteens or teenagers. And it's like, you know, this is still pretty tame for a rated R movie. And, you know, I did think later on there was, like, some cool vampire effect stuff or stuff that I like the look of. But I don't know. I just feel like, kind of like you, just like underwhelmed, and that there was just a lot of wasted opportunity where I do think there might have been a cool premise in this.
Yeah, I agree. I will just shout out, I do think the visual effects make up a lot of the time with like the application of, let's say, teeth or contact lenses or bites or whatever. Like a lot of the practical effects here on display are good. I do think there's times when they overly use, like, I don't know, CGI blood or something. Like, sometimes it's practical, sometimes it's CG. And, you know, it just, once again, if you've seen Ready or Not, you have seen some of these exact effects before replicated. Like I can't stress how insane it was, like, that they reused, like, exact comedic beats from Ready or Not in this movie. And once again, it's like it's the same filmmakers. Maybe it's just like referential and they're doing it kind of tongue in cheek. But to me, it just kind of seemed a little bit lazy. And then you have, you know, once again, this old money mansion. You have this group of eccentric characters kind of like being hunted or hunting each other down. You have these like explosive kind of over the top gore effects. And then how it all wraps up, if you've seen Ready or Not, you've pretty much seen the end of this as well. So it's literally like, I don't know what I was here to see. It's basically like, instead of Ready or Not having like this old kind of like archaic hunting game that like this family plays, it's just like it's a vampire doing it instead. And to me, it just wasn't an interesting enough point of differentiation. And also, it's just like, I vastly prefer Samara Weaving to Melissa Barrera. So it was just like, for me, it was just like, yeah, it was just the step down in that department. So yeah, this isn't something I'd probably recommend to rush out and go see in theaters. Once again, I don't think it's necessarily bad. It's just like, it's just so whatever that it's like, yeah, you could probably watch this on streaming and have a good time with it. I don't know why you have to rush out and see it in theaters. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm about the same. And I mean, everything that I've been seeing, it feels like we're kind of, I feel like we're in the total, you know, other side of things, because yeah, it seems like this is getting pretty good reviews out of
it
the
is,
gate.
Yeah,
but I feel the same. Like I just feel like I could have watched this at home, and I'd probably be more happy because I didn't spend all the money on food and all that. And unfortunately, yeah, I just don't think this is necessarily a rush for Radio Silence for you to go see.
I agree. So yeah, neither of us are really necessarily recommending to rush out and see this one in theaters. I kind of have a feeling that if you're listening to this, you probably already have rushed out and seen it in theaters, just because I think this is a sort of movie that Radio Silence is kind of cultivating their own little fan base. And especially with the amount of support behind Melissa Barrera, I'm sure, like, you know, this is probably going to do pretty well opening weekend. So yeah, with that, I think it's time we cut to the spoiler discussion for Abigail. We are now in our spoiler discussion for Abigail, so if you've not seen Abigail, it's time to tune out and come back once you've seen the movie, or keep listening if you simply don't care. Rowan, was there something that you had to get off your chest right away in the spoiler-filled discussion? I got that one line written down that drove me crazy, kind of right at the end of the movie.
Oh my God, I want to go right to the end of the movie, so let's do it.
All right, so the one line to me that is just kind of indicative of the writing for this movie is when Abigail says to Dan Stevens right at the end of the movie, "The thing about being a vampire is that it takes a really fucking long time before you can do all the cool shit." And it's just like, it's one of those lines that I'm not trying to dunk on Ginger Snaps, but it feels like a line that would be delivered from, like, you know, early 2000s kind of edgy horror or comedy even, that I was just like, is that supposed to be like this badass line? Like, to me, it was just so cringy, and she wasn't even actually doing anything cool in the moment. She was just like leaping on him or whatever. So I was just like, what is this line? Anyways, let's talk about the ending.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. Although I will say, I wish I had more Dan Stevens as vampire, just in life in general. I thought he was fantastic.
So I think that was probably the best reveal of the movie. I'm kind of bummed out that the trailer that I just watched seems to spoil that it's very likely he's a vampire right at the end of it. I mean, he's only there for like 2 seconds, but it's still like, that was a surprise for me in the movie. Like,
me
I didn't
also,
surprise-
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't expect him to become a vampire, immediately kill Giancarlo Esposito, and then essentially be like the big bad for the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes of the movie. And I thought he was excellent as well. And like, once again, that's why in the spoiler-free section, I was saying Dan Stevens is my favorite part of the movie. I liked his character just the best, and kind of like him hamming it up as this like ex-Brooklyn cop. But also like when he has the turn in the third act and he's really like chewing up the scenery as this like over-the-top eccentric vampire, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, and I was gonna say too, like, since you briefly brought it up there, like, I did enjoy kind of the stereotypical very 90s, like, oh, this person's this person's that, but you know, we kind of said, like, I just don't think they used the stereotypes as well as they could have. I think they should have leaned way more into it. Mm-hmm. And like, then I think it would have been a little more like schlocky. And then, like, I would have had way more fun with it, because I'm like, oh, yeah, like, we're totally just making fun of, like, 90s movies where I got, like, a hacker and whatever. I thought it was weird that we had two military people. Like, I was like, everyone's something different, so that's kind of cool. And then it's like, no, just, like, our lead and this other guy are just going to be the same thing, essentially.
We also had two or three different scenes where they kind of all say like who they are and what they do and what their specialties are. Like, there's kind of the scene with Giancarlo Esposito where he kind of introduces them and gives them all their like names, their code names. And then there's the scene with Melissa Barrera being able to read pretty much all of them and figure out their history. And then there's the scene with Abigail in the cage, you know, kind of like 2/3 of the way through the movie, where she's kind of revealing how they all had ties to her father and, you know, how she lured them here under false pretenses of this, you know, ransom when they were just going to be her prey. That I was just like, okay, I like that you're kind of reinventing this every time, but it's like each one is like, well, the first one with the code names is like a 30-second bit, but the other two are like probably 6, 7, 8 minute sequences, and they're both all right, or, you know, at least some of the scenes that stand out a little bit more strongly to me in the movie, but they're very similar. That, yeah. I was just like, it's just strange. It's a repeated beat, you know?
All right, yeah, okay, I went on a tangent. Let's just get to what I thought was just like the eye roll worst part. Yeah, so, you know, we have Abigail's father show up, who, you know, I think to me almost was ruined if you followed any of the like kind of production, what was going on when they got this, because obviously, you know, the big deal when we found out Radio Silence was getting a hold of Universal's property was that they were going to be dealing with Dracula. Like, they...
Dracula's Daughter was, I think, the working title, or like the readaptation of an earlier movie.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so we get Dracula coming, and I get it. I'm sure they thought to themselves, you know, oh, these kids, they're not going to care about Dracula, so we need to, you know, we need to make sure we just never say Dracula in this movie, and we go by whatever the fuck his name was.
Yeah, I forget his name,
like,
is as well.
Lazar and then or something.
And then he does the whole, I go by many names, you know, and I'm like, okay, oh,
yeah,
cool.
When he said that, and not only that, it's played by Matthew Good, who, the weirdest casting of all time. I was like,
is this supposed supposed to do something for me, this casting?
Like, I mean, the only reason I know him is because he plays Ozymandias in The Watchmen.
Okay, but, like, that's not a big... Like, you're not having The Watchmen fans, like, pop off in the audience for that, you know? Like,
I'm just saying, all the great actors we've had, even in a cameo to play Dracula... You know, Jesus, even what's his name from fucking Van Helsing, give me anybody but this guy. Like, this guy was the least intimidating, like, the least sexy, like, Dracula possible. It was just, which maybe they wanted, like, this guy just looks like, I don't know, like a middle-income dad or something.
Well, he looked like the people from Morbius. I forget the actor's names, but he would have fit right at home in just the Morbius movie.
Oh my god. If we could have Jared Leto come in and it's Morbius as her dad.
Oh my god, yes. That would have been what we needed. But I thought it was going to be like a big cameo. Like, obviously you can't do Nick Cage because he was just in it in, you know, that movie last year. But I was like, all right, who's the cameo going to be? Who do they get? Fucking, you know, Tom Cruise back as Dracula or something, you know? Like, I was expecting something crazy. And then I was just like, who is that guy? Am I supposed to, like, know who this is? Like, it did literally nothing for me. And I just found it, like, more annoying that we were just dragging on this movie to kind of give, like, this Dracula cameo for, you know, 5 minutes right at the end.
Dan Stevens had to have his hand in this because I believe this guy was also in Downton Abbey. So
okay,
Dan Stevens must have said, listen, man, I can get you a job. Don't worry about it. But yeah, I was just like, I thought he was just totally miscast for the part. But the character, Dracula, you're giving us Dracula. We know it's a Dracula movie. Like, it doesn't matter. It's about Dracula's daughter. We know at some point we're probably going to get Dracula. And you underwhelm with this. And then you give us that goddamn line about, like, you better leave because it's dinner time soon. I was ready to just, like, fucking walk out of the theater. Man.
Rowan was fucking pissed. Oh, he was storming out.
I was just like, not only are we going to get this weak-ass Dracula, but Dracula's going to say the fucking weakest lines of all time. That were obviously supposed to be funny, but weren't funny at all unless I'm like six. Like, makes me angry, man.
Yeah, I love that. It pissed me off too, but it was more so like, why are we dragging out the movie for this? We've seen all the statues throughout, like, you know, the house of, like, the little girl and kind of, like, the masked protector, which could be, like, a familiar or it could be literally Dracula. And I was like, okay, of course we're probably going to get the reveal. But I was just like, why is this, like, so long? And, like, maybe it was only a minute or two, but it felt like an eternity when I was watching the movie, especially since it wasn't a funny cameo. And, like, yeah, he just wasn't intimidating at all. He reminded me of, like, Jared Leto's Joker or something. He comes in, I'm just like, who's this goofy guy? Like, what is this?
You know? It would have been better just... You know, implied that she is Dracula's son and I didn't see Dracula because I wouldn't have really cared. Like,
it's... Dracula's daughter, Rowan. She's not Dracula's son.
Whatever.
But yes, I agree. Like,
that's
they just
how angry
heavily
I am.
Implied it. One other thing I want to mention before we kind of get into reviewing it is I did think there was like some cute little effects with Catherine Newton when she was turning into the vampire.
We're on the same page this whole time, man. It's
all
like,
right. Yeah.
Incredible.
I was like, I have to just mention when she is turning, which I don't really understand how she is a vampire with no agency, or like, is she a familiar, or exactly what's going on there? Because Abigail is very much controlling her one-to-one. Like, you know, she's doing her dance routine, and so is Catherine Newton doing it. But when Dan Stevens gets turned, and of course he drinks from a bit of Giancarlo's blood, so it's like, oh, does that make him have, like, autonomy, or since he killed Giancarlo, does he now have free reign? I was just like, the vampire lore doesn't make sense in this movie. Melissa Barrera gets bit at the end, but she doesn't become a vampire because, I guess, you know, Dan Stevens is killed off. Like, once again, there's just some of this vampire lore, it's just they're playing really fast and loose with it when... We all kind of understand vampire lore, especially because our society was obsessed with it like 15 years ago. So it was just like, I was kind of annoyed by it a little bit. But yes, Catherine Newton, I thought she was pretty great as a vampire in this movie. I very much enjoyed when she was kind of like stalking them for the 5 minutes or so. And, you know, the whole like little gag of like, oh, come nearer. I found this guy. He's dead. You know, like that was a good little beat. And then the reveal of the serving dish. You know, with the sunlight reflecting off the serving dish was I don't know. That was a fun little moment, I guess.
Yeah, I thought like her doing the ballet dancing and stuff and being controlled was like pretty menacing, and also gave me big From Dusk Till Dawn vibes. I was thinking about, you know, when Tom Savini's character Sex Machine gets possessed and he's like kind of trying to hide it for as long as he can, and you know, he's turning into a vampire and he's like hiding it, and then it finally just like comes out. It's like a turnaround, big reveal. I thought her makeup looked fantastic.
Yeah, the makeup was really good, which is why I wanted to make sure I mentioned in the spoiler-free section about the makeup. Yeah.
Yeah, like I thought that looked fantastic, but this was really like, to me, out of the whole movie, this was like the bright spot of vampire horror in this. Like, as much as I love Dan Stevens as, you know, looking like a vampire, very menacing, he was still giving me like action comic book vampire baddie vibes.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't horrific, where this, I was like, yeah, this, I can see this is like an actual horrific moment. And it was creepy. The music was playing. I will say, I thought the music was pretty ass in this.
So I was upset that they didn't reincorporate Swan Lake more into the score. They do it on like two moments, probably.
And I love that, yeah.
And I was just like, I understand it's kind of like overplayed to a certain degree now. Like, that's how every trailer does it. They take like this, you know, iconic song and they slow it down and make it horror-esque. But it was like, in this movie, it would have fit really well just to use it a little bit more because of, you know, Abigail being a ballerina dancer and that being our introduction to her, like practicing Swan Lake, right? So
exactly. And I mean, to me, like, I, whenever it did play, I was like, oh, this is what should be, you know, remixed, played, whatever, throughout this movie. Cause then this is also like, you know, your lifeline through the history into, you know, the 1930s Dracula. Like, so it all makes sense. And I was like, you know, the song's creepy in general. I mean, most music like that's kind of got a creep vibe when you add horror images to it. And then, yeah, I mean, for the music for me, I just like, I was like, do we really need like, you know, these random like 2024 like mumblecore rap songs from like people I don't know. I listen to that kind of music and I don't know. It was definitely, I'm just going to go out on a limb. I was like, it's like no name white people they found on like SoundCloud or something, because I was just like, this isn't very good. And, you know, it brought me back. I was thinking about Scream, where I was like, at least Scream had the like Demi Lovato song that I thought was kind of catchy and was kind of a bop, where this one, I was just like, it's just really like filler music that I'd expect in like a Tubi movie. Like, it was that bad, other than Swan Lake.
If you're going to be bringing in like the mumblecore kind of rap lines, like, it has to hit like in Talk to Me when it hits, and you're like, oh, this is like a current of the movie, like this is the vibe, whereas this movie, it brings you in with like Swan Lake and then hits you with, you know, some SoundCloud artist that none of us have ever heard of, right? It just, once again, the score just should have been more classical, in the vein of Swan Lake, using some of those notes and refrains to kind of like build off of throughout, and I think it would have worked a lot better. To me, I agree, it was just completely underwhelming the entire time. And just going back to the Catherine Newton erupting in blood, I'm just going to spoil Ready or Not for you because you haven't seen it, but essentially at the end of that movie, like when they don't kind of fulfill the curse of like needing to kind of kill off a certain amount of people, all of the members of the family just burst into blood, like spontaneous combustion, like pew, like all over the walls, all over the ceiling and everything, and it's super ridiculous and over the top. But the way that like Catherine Newton explodes is like identical to that. The way like when people get like staked in the movie, how they explode is the exact same thing. So when I was watching this movie, I was like, you guys are reusing the same effect from Ready or Not. But it even goes a level further, where Ready or Not ends with like the final girl kind of like stumbling out of the house covered in blood, and she sits down on, you know, the step and like smokes a cigarette, like kind of like, oh my god, I had a terrible night. And it kind of like ends at that point. I think someone makes a line about like, you know, in-laws suck or something, you know, fuck the in-laws, whatever. This movie ends almost identically with Melissa Barrera stumbling out of the house covered in blood. She, you know, she goes to like a car and she sits in there and she's kind of like thinking about things, and she like picks in her pocket and she puts the lollipop in her mouth instead of the cigarette. And like, once again, it's framed very much, as all shot very much. And like, obviously, like, they're paying homage or being a little bit silly to Ready or Not. But for me, it's just like, I would rather be watching Ready or Not You know, and I'm not one of those people that absolutely love that movie, but I prefer it vastly over this. So it's just like a lot of the things in this movie that even like people kind of credit as being like, oh, that was fun or that was unique or that was interesting. It's like, no, Ready or Not did that like 5 years ago. I just wish I was watching that over this, I guess. Is there anything else you want to mention before we get into rating it?
I mean, really, we're just, kind of, I feel like saying it's mid all over and over again. Like I said, to me, I think what's hard, especially in the single location, like we said, was just, it was too little of a cast. I don't know how much I loved. I mean, realistically, we had, two people turn in the vampires, but it wasn't like they were menacing throughout the whole, the whole period of the movie, which, like I said, it continuously, the entire time I'm in it, I'm like, okay, well, you know, when we use this pretty much same premise and From Dusk Till Dawn, because, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn, the strip club, the windows, the doors, all the shutters come up, they lock, they shut, you can't get out. But, like, the whole thing about that was, like, you know, even your cast of, you know, your merry band of good guys are slowly being picked off and turned into vampires. So then they're turning against the group of people and the vampires are multiplying more and more. It's more menacing. Where this, it's like, oh, someone turns into a vampire, but then in 3 minutes they explode. And then it's like, oh, well, okay, so, you know, really, it's just like Abigail. Like, it's just Abigail, which could be fine. But, like, I just found, like you said, like, with the lore of her controlling people. And then kind of when we get into the Dan Stevens section, we're like, we just totally lose track of her for a little bit. Where she's not even menacing. Because it's just kind of Dan Stevens then. And I'm like, okay. And I just, it was just, it seems to me it was a mess. I didn't see Ready or Not, and it seems to me maybe they were just thinking, hey, we're a little bigger now, so maybe we can just remake this movie and people won't have to see Ready or Not.
It's basically Ready or Not, but without a weird familial kind of like ritual that needs to be fulfilled. It's Ready or Not, but with a vampire in the later half that's, you know, killing everybody, or like a couple of vampires, right? This movie has kind of like a two vampire quota. Like, whenever there's two, one has to die off pretty much like immediately. And like, when I was watching it, I kind of wanted the same thing as what you're saying, where I almost wish the vampirism just multiplied, or maybe like they all just became vampires at a certain degree and it was just strange. Like, I don't know, I wish the movie just went in a different direction and surprised me, but it very much didn't. I was just kind of bored for a lot of it, and that's the thing. For a lot of it, I was like, this is fine, but it was almost like I'd rather be home doing something else than sitting here watching this, which is not a good thought when you're seeing a horror movie in theaters, you know. So yeah, that was basically my thoughts on it. So if you're new to the podcast, our review rubric is Nay, Okay, Yay, or Slay. So Rowan, what would you give Abigail?
Yeah, I feel like my rating's not going to be, surprised. I'm going to give it an okay. You know, it's not bad enough that it needed to be a nay. Like I said, like, I had an okay time. There was stuff I liked. It was worth it for Dan Stevens and Catherine Newton. And, you know, I've stated I've kind of come around on Melissa Barrera. She didn't bug me as much as she bugged you, but I didn't enjoy the fact that her character was so much similar to other characters in this. I thought the effects were okay. Like I said, Bursting to me was a lot more exciting in Blade than it was in this. So I'd probably rather keep my exploding vampires in Blade and do some original. And even stuff we didn't talk about, like, you know, Angus Cloud getting decapitated, that happens totally off screen, and
it elicited a reaction from my audience, though.
Yeah, which I'm just cold inside, and I was like, oh, we didn't even see it, and like, okay, like, oh, we're gonna get the old, you know, sitting in a chair and you're gonna touch him and his head's gonna fall off. Like, it just to me, the main issue with this film is like, there wasn't a lot that was very original, and you know, for guys with this much excitement around them for the movies they make, and getting a hold of a Universal property, I was kind of hoping they were going to bring it and, you know, do something totally different that I've never seen that would make me excited for Universal to continue, you know, using these iconic characters and lore and things like that. And then the last thing I'll just say in my rating, because we didn't really say anything, I thought Alicia Weir that played Abigail did a pretty good job. You know, for a kid actor,
never mentioned her at all.
Yeah. you know, I thought she, you know, she did a good, I mean, you gotta, you know, scream a lot. You gotta kind of be menacing. And I thought she was fine. She played a good, creepy kid vampire. Unfortunately, I think her character was a little underwritten to be the main, you know, villain, or kind of not at the end, villain, which is, you know, an issue with that. But yeah, just okay. I think it's kind of a mixed bag, and, you know, I'd probably watch it again if someone wanted to, you know, put it on a streaming site and I was with them, but I'm probably not going like out of my way to like go to the theater again to see this. What about you, Colton? What would you rate it?
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I think it's okay. It's a movie, as I've said multiple times throughout this, that I don't think it's straight up bad. I just think a lot of it is really boring or disappointing, or I just go like, kind of, why did they go in this direction? I even think the pitch of the movie, like, you know, you get your hands on a Universal monster property, it's like, okay, we're gonna do something with Dracula, but it's like a heist movie where you steal Dracula, essentially. And, you know, I'm like, okay, cool, that sounds interesting. But it's like, it should have been like, in 15 minutes, they should have revealed that Abigail was the vampire. There should have been like some other people that, you know, intercepted along the way or tracked them. So you get a couple extra people that break into the building, you know, almost like a heist on top of the heist or something, yeah. Right? Just to like give you some more bodies, more just fodder, right? More something more interesting to happen in this movie. Instead, they spend an hour developing characters that are realistically all caricatures and are all lying about their backstories anyway, before they reveal Abigail to be a vampire. And then the last hour, it's weird because there's parts at which it's kind of rushing to like show things or to turn people into vampires or kind of killing off one or two people. But then it also just drags and takes a really long time to like finish up. So it's a weird movie. It's just paced weird. The entire time I was watching it, I was just like, this is all fine. But like, once again, I saw so much of it in Ready or Not already. And I didn't think of From Dusk Till Dawn when I was watching this. I understand why you're referencing it. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely love From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah. So if I thought of From Dusk Till Dawn when I was watching this, this would probably be a nay, because that's like an actual like excellent movie. So yeah, it's an okay for me. I will say that the little girl who was playing Abigail, I thought she was okay. She didn't like blow me away or anything. I heard a lot of people saying Alicia Weir was like amazing in the heart and soul of this movie and all that stuff. And
yeah.
She gets the job done. There's lots of moments where she has to cry and she can't cry that I always find a little bit distracting. But, you know, put a camera on me and tell me to cry and I'm not going to be able to do it either. So whatever. A little bit of sympathy there for that. It was just, you know, I noticed it a few times. That's all. So if you're not following us already on our socials, you can do so at It Slays Podcast. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Slasher, Letterboxd, Threads, Blue Sky. If there's a social media, we're probably there at It Slays Podcast. And if you want to help support the show financially, like our horror hounds, Holly, Nicholas, Patrick, Mark, Steven, Joy, Carvey, Dan, Brian, Trevor, and Genesis, gain access to the Patreon-exclusive show Stream Screams and get episodes of the main show 48 hours early. Be sure to head on over to patreon.com/itslayspodcast and choose whatever tier works best for you. Rowan, Swan Lake making the playlist.
I feel like, yeah, maybe we'll have to throw that on. Definitely not any of the really bad rap music in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to go to Spotify to the It Slays Podcast horrific playlist, if you have any problems finding it, you can go to any of the social media that Colton just mentioned. Click the Linktree link in the bio, take you directly there. We upload scores or licensed music from iconic horror movies we review, or just horror movies we love. So yeah, give it a follow. We update it regularly, and get your spooky music on, because why the hell not?
And next time on the show, I'm pretty bummed, because when I look at the schedule now, it looks like I'm technically going to be out of the country for work. So the weekend where Cuckoo and I Saw the TV Glow are releasing, I'm not going to be here, I don't think. There's the possibility like maybe I'll make it to like the Thursday night's showing and maybe be able to record something. But I think I'm going to miss both of those. So I think Rowan and, you know, Jill or someone else is going to have to jump in and try and cover those in my absence. But I'm super bummed because I've been looking forward to both of those for so long. So yeah, I'd say our next episode's probably on Cuckoo or I Saw the TV Glow or maybe both. I don't know. And with that, I think that about wraps things up for this episode. So until next time, I'm Colton.
I'm Rowan.
And as long as you keep listening, we'll keep slaying.